Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Well, that's silly, isn't it?
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everybody. My name's James, and for the benefit of those listening on the podcast, you're listening to my regular YouTube live stream, Ask James, where I welcome questions from the YouTube community on anything football related. And with no Premier League football coming up this weekend, I'm not going to waste any time. I'm going to get straight into the questions. Adash says, hi James, hope you're doing well. Thoughts on Jude Bellingham and if he'll be a good fit for Liverpool, as he is heavily linked with them. He won't come in cheap though, thanks. Now, I've seen reports this week saying that Dortmund will want £130 million, which I wouldn't say would be beyond Liverpool's reach, but I think there has been an assumption, and we've spoken about it during the summer, that one of the reasons Liverpool didn't go in hard for a midfielder this year was because they were waiting to get Bellingham next year. He's obviously a super talent, top talent. I think he'd work well in a Jurgen Klopp 4-3-3. I obviously hope he starts for England tonight. I think that's got to be tried properly against good opposition, to have a look at him next to Declan Rice and see if the two of them can truly work together under a pressure situation. England have to win in Milan tonight, really, or are facing relegation in the Nations League. Well, we bothered, no, not really. But yeah, I think he would obviously be a great signing for Liverpool. Will Liverpool go that far if Dortmund won 130? Probably not, but I feel like there's been compromises in the past. I feel like Dortmund were constantly quoting United over 100 million for Jadon Sancho, for example, and it didn't go that high. But it could be that Liverpool have to go towards sort of the 100 million pound mark. It also probably depends if Bellingham's got his heart set on it. Who knows? Maybe if he has a great World Cup, will Real Madrid come calling, for example? I don't think we know from the player himself if he's got that preference for Liverpool. But yes, I do think he'd be a good fit. Owen Walsh says, James, brother, you're a diamond. Thanks for all you do. You're very welcome, mate. Thank you. Mo Ed says, hi, James. You might have spoken about this before, but can you explain to me why Royal, that's Emerson Royal, is still getting so many minutes considering the performances Doherty put in when he got the chance last season? Oh, the patrons are going to love what I'm about to say. I've been quite staunch in my defence of Emerson Royal so far this season. He wasn't good in Lisbon last midweek. Otherwise, his performances have been okay. What I keep trying to explain to people is people only want to judge him on the ball. And offensively, his final pass, his delivery into the box, his crossing, his goals and assists output, all below what you'd want for an Antonio Conte team. However, he brings balance to the team, which really helps Sessegnon and Perisic on the other side. He's defensively far better than the other options. And frankly, having seen Ivan Perisic in that position on Saturday against Leicester, I think I'd rather Emerson Royal played. So look, he's not the long-term answer, but I think he's been doing fine. People never seem to judge him on his defensive work, which is largely sound. He has to be judging him on offensive. Defensively, he's far better than Doherty. Like, it's not even close. In the case of Matt, obviously, I was heavily critical of him, and he did have that great spell just before and just after the April international break last season, where he was thoroughly deserving to be in the team. It didn't matter if he was playing right or left from a fantasy perspective. It was obviously very interesting. But he suffered badly from the injury, and Doherty gave a really good interview this week while he was on duty with the Republic of Ireland, saying that actually he was still feeling discomfort and pain during pre-season. All the signs we had in pre-season was that Conte's favoured was Doherty and likely Perisic. So it was then a surprise when Emerson got the nod for game week one. As I said, I think Emerson has done okay. Doherty's still been in discomfort. He's admitted himself he's only now getting rid of the discomfort that he's had off the back of the injury, and he's now getting towards full fitness. Conte has said the likes of Doherty, Oliver Skipp, Wijnaldum will be used a lot more after the international break. So, yeah, there'll be an opportunity coming up for Doherty to stake a claim in the team. Definitely. There will be opportunities. He will play games in forthcoming weeks. I would be very surprised, however, if Emerson Royal didn't start at Arsenal. It would be a big call for Doherty to start that game. Quite frankly, Doherty against Martinelli would give me kittens. Emerson's not going to do massive bits the other way, but I don't want to see Martinelli going at Doherty. That's a nightmare waiting to happen. So I'm sure Emerson will play. Adash says, also, hope you've seen Son's free kick for Korea that he scored. Looks like he's back in top form again. Well, look, a free kick doesn't tell us if someone's in form or not, but I can tell you that he should definitely be taking free kicks for Tottenham. There's no doubt about that. And I don't know why we haven't seen it yet. It's the third one he scored for South Korea recently. He scored two in the last international break as well. Everyone at Tottenham wants Son to take the direct free kicks around the box. That said, I don't feel like we've had many this season, but it still feels like when we have, it's been Dyer or Kane. Preference would be Dyer over Kane, but preference would be Son over both of them. So hopefully we'll see more of that. But he certainly isn't going to do him any harm that he scored another great goal today. Lewis James says, afternoon, James. Have you seen the guest appearance in Stormzy's new music video? Yeah, I've seen that prick there shushing himself. I don't know, he was shushing last week when he got sent off while managing Roma to a defeat at home to Atalanta, which I note Roma had a very high XG in that game and Atalanta had a very low XG. Sounds like Roma are very unfortunate. It's amazing how football comes at you fast sometimes. Mo Ed says, any insights to Brighton new manager still invested in some of their assets? Yeah, I mean, I can give quite a bit. I'd highly recommend listening to Yesterday's Clash of Correspondence with FPL Loco Lord and FPL Seagull, where we spent a good portion of that podcast speaking about De Zerbi and what we can expect. For our advanced tier patrons, I've also done a video looking at how he likes to set up stylistically and what we can expect from them. So favoured system is 4-2-3-1. Doesn't mean that's what he'll play. He has used 3-4-3 in the past. He's used 4-1-4-1 in the past. So he does have flexibility. I think we can look at his previous two jobs at Shakhtar and Sassuolo and gather from that that 4-2-3-1 is favoured. But as discussed with Sam yesterday, it might be that he comes in, looks at Brighton and says, you know, actually three at the back works here. And Sam certainly thinks that three at the back is best for Brighton. What is certainly important, and although I said he has used 4-1-4-1, two sixes, a double pivot, seems to be a predominant feature of his teams. What they like to do is they like to suck the opposition in to a press and they will keep the ball. Lots of short passing and then they'll fire fast and pass you and try and break through lines. So they like to draw the press. They will play very slowly. It will be frustrating at times, particularly for Brighton fans, when opposition teams don't come and press hard at them, like Tottenham probably won't in game week 10, for example. Liverpool might in game week 9. And it's going to be really interesting to see from these two teams who will play very different stylistically without the ball against Brighton, how they react. Because Brighton do have good footballers. In terms of the FPL side of it, Moed, what we discussed on that pod yesterday was in most cases probably play them against Liverpool. The offensive players particularly, look, McAllister's on penalties, he's not going to score every week. But I think the likes of Gross, Trossard, I would foresee staying in the team at the moment, and there's nothing wrong with playing them against the Liverpool side that are struggling defensively and only kept one clean sheet so far this season. Following that, it's Tottenham at home, then it's Brentford, Nottingham Forest. So I think there's a little period where you can judge it. Doesn't mean, obviously, you have to play your Brighton assets at Liverpool. And for most people, you probably won't want to. But what I'm saying to you is I think it's okay. We think there'll be goals in that fixture. And that was pretty agreed on between the three of us. So nothing wrong with keeping and assessing at the moment. I think defensively, they probably will, over time, concede more goals than what they have done under Potter. But they may well be scoring more goals as well. But that's nothing to say. There's nothing to say it's going to happen immediately. John Cahill says, afternoon, James, mate. Who's the likely 11 for England tonight, do you reckon? Liz Truss up top with Kane an option. Definitely not Liz Truss anywhere near that team. My best guess would be we think Maguire's going to play. We know Tony's been left out of the 23, which I'm pretty disappointed about. That's the reports that's coming out this afternoon anyway. So my best guess that the team tonight, because John Stones isn't involved either, we don't think. My best guess for team tonight would be Ramsdale, Walker, Dyer, Maguire. I think probably Trippier left wing back. Probably Reece James on the right. I think Bellingham and Rice, Sterling, Kane, and the last one's pretty much up for grabs. But I'd guess, having just won the England Player of the Year, I'd guess that Saka will probably get the nod. But we're not going to see the same team tonight and on Monday anyway. I think what we've learned today from, if Abraham's got the nod into ahead of Tony in the squad, that makes me think Tony won't go to Qatar. And Gahey's not in the squad as well. So I think we can probably gather that Tomori and Maguire have the nod on him as probably the left-sided centre-back at the moment. So we're not going to get any surprise call-ups. Southgate was already clear about that in the summer. Basically said this would be the last opportunity to call players up. I would like to see Tony get a chance either tonight or on Monday. And I very much hope you take it. He would be a preferred option to me than Tammy Abraham, personally. William Frick says, hello, James. How do you think the matchup stylistically between Arsenal and Spurs will look like next weekend? My personal feeling is that Arsenal could well play right into Spurs' hands. They might. I think there's an emotional element to the fixture where both teams can get lost in it sometimes. And it very much tends to happen, ironically, to the away team, where the occasion gets the better of them. Tottenham have a horrendous record at the Emirates. We've won once there in the league since we played there. We've never kept a league clean sheet at the Emirates. In fact, we haven't kept a clean sheet away to Arsenal in a Premier League game since 1998. And a 0-0 draw when Espen Bardsson was in goal for us, and I have no idea how we got away with it that day. So Arsenal will rightly go into the game as favourites. I think, yes, there is an element that they could play into our hands if they get frustrated and try and go at us too hard, too fast. I think Tottenham's recent away results against Big Six opponents offers encouragement. Drawing at Chelsea in August, drawing at Liverpool in May, winning at Manchester City in February. Obviously, we lost at Manchester United in March. We haven't obviously played at Arsenal since Nuno was in charge. There's nothing to judge there. But those away results offer some encouragement. The 5 points from those four games, that we can get something from them. It could be a great fixture for us on the counter-attack. That said, I think they're playing, in fairness to Arsenal, they're playing great football at the moment. Arguably the best football in the league. I think they are evolving from a more possession-orientated team that is more capable of hurting teams quicker and faster. I think they're very adaptable. I think if they go 1-0 up, they probably won't go for Tottenham as hard as they did back in September when Nuno turned up and played this bizarre formation, which essentially didn't even have a central midfield player, left Højbjerg completely out to dry, and he didn't play well anyway. We won't do that this time. We'll be difficult to play against. We are, and I know my team will go there and give them a game. It could go either way from the tactical aspect. The instinct in me is that historically Arsenal just tend to beat us at the Emirates, is the reality. Chim says, thoughts on Solanke on wildcard? Once of hitting Sterling and Solanke plus a 4 million defender seems to be the sacrifices I have to make. He hasn't returned that much, but good fixtures and central for Bournemouth. Yeah, look, Solanke is very much in mind for me, and I'm not on wildcard. I spoke about this prior to my last wildcard, was debating going with him and starting with Zaha in the first instance. My decision was to start with Isak. Now, if Isak is out, then I may well make that move to go from Isak to Solanke, and it opens up really nicely for me to go to Martinelli to Zaha in 10. That would be part of the strategy thinking, and that will also open up Reece James for me, that move as well. So it's not just about, oh, Solanke. Well, actually, Solanke saving of money might offer me James and Zaha, and I'm pretty sure those two players are going to be in the majority of game week 9 wildcards, so they are priority players for me, particularly Wilfried Zaha. James, I'm not as fussed about. If I was on wildcard, definitely have him. I'm not as fussed about it. So it depends, I think, Chim, what those sacrifices are for you to get Solanke. The fixtures are good, right? Three of the next four, Brentford, Leicester, Southampton at home. Then there's Fulham away. Importantly, you'll need him in game week 12 at home to Southampton. I think he's at a price where you don't have to start him every game, but probably for the next four you will. And then there's a decision to be made later on about that. It may even be that game week 13, you want to drop him down to a 4.5 million forward. So he's right on radar for me. And I think if you are going to go there, then the timing is right now ahead of the Brentford game. Who knows? Brendan Rodgers might get sacked at Leicester by the time Leicester go there, and it might be different, and it's a more difficult opponent for Bournemouth. But those fixtures are good. He will be heavily involved. Yes, the returns haven't been there as such for him as yet. Do we overly expect them to be? I think the thing is, when you buy a player like that, like, stop expecting the world. Like, if I go and buy a Solanke, those four games, one return in every two is fine. 6-2, 6-2, something like that. You know, 4-point average across the four games or something. It's okay. I'm not expecting the world. If he does better than that, great. And I think you can't compare it at the moment to, like, I wouldn't say Solanke's a better option than Perisic or Trippier or Reece James, kind of players at similar-ish sort of value. You can't say that. But we do need him in game week 12. And that's really important. And they do have a good fixture at home with Southampton, and they have good fixtures before that. So if I was on wildcard now, I'd have him. And I may buy him this week anyway. Andrew Grundin says, hi, James. Looking to sell Jesus to Solanke in preparation for week 12 blank. Questioning whether to do it in week 9 or 10. Jesus in North London derby that has goals, or Solanke against Brentford, who's weak on road. I think the best advice I can give you there, Andrew, is to wait. So you're right about Brentford weak on the road. Yeah, it's very, very true. Arsenal historical record against Tottenham as well, though, as I've said. So I wouldn't rush to make the move. I think if you're in doubt about which week to make the move, the best thing to do is do nothing and wait. So I would hold on. Roger Stard says, good afternoon. Good afternoon, Roar. Hope you will. Owen Wilson says, hi, James. You seen about this Højbjerg injuring Perisic stuff? Anything to actually be concerned about, do you think? I mean, first thing, if anyone's seen the clip, which has been very so sensationalised over social media, of course, is, I mean, it's completely nothing. It's completely innocuous. Højbjerg is certainly not intentionally injured Perisic. He gets his body in the way. Perisic appears to have a problem after that. We've got no word on if it's a serious problem for Perisic or not. He might have even been due to come off as a substitute anyway. The clip I've seen of him looks like he's getting helped off the pitch, but it could be no different to someone getting a bit of treatment and then goes off the pitch. But in this case, they've substituted him. We don't have the information. FPL PTSD says, hi, James. Thanks for the top quality content as ever. Smash that like button, please, people. Yeah, thanks very much, mate. But how do you reckon you'll fit the schedule during the World Cup? Any watch-alongs planned? Okay, good question. So nothing's finalised, but it feels like a good time to talk about it, which I have done already with a lot of our advanced tier patrons. Is I know most people, particularly the first week and the second Monday, there's games at 10 a.m., 1 p.m., 4 p.m., 7 p.m. Now, I don't believe anyone really wants to be listening to me. I'm sure I want to be watching the football. I'm sure you want to be watching the football. So what I have in mind at the moment is probably to do, for the first week, is possibly to do streams at 8 o'clock in the morning, have like a breakfast stream for like half hour, do a bit of preview. I'm sure I'll be involved in some format of World Cup fantasy. Just give you an update of the previous day's football, look ahead to the next day, and then so on. And then, yeah, for our patrons, we're considering probably doing a watch along each day during the first, the Monday to Friday period of the first week, and then the Monday the week after. Then after that, once we lose the 10 a.m. and the 1 p.m. games and they become 3 and 7, then we'll probably open it back up to more like normal content. We've got a few different ideas at the moment, but that's probably the favoured one I'm thinking of at the moment. There will be content. It won't stop. Patrick Gordart says, how would you change the Nations League format so that anyone would actually care about it? I don't know. Maybe if we'd have won it the other year when we got to the Final Four in Portugal, maybe we'd feel differently about it, perhaps. I don't know how you do. Look, it's better than friendlies. I don't think it's... What's one thing that's not helpful is you've got situations like Belgium and Wales have played each other like 10 times over the last 4 or 6 years or something. It just feels like stale. Even Kevin De Bruyne's like, I'm sick of Wales. So I think one way of doing it would be you couldn't draw perhaps teams who were also involved in your qualifying groups for the World Cup, European Championships, whatever's going on at the time. So it would be nice if, for example, once England, the draw for the Euros for 2024 is on Sunday the 9th of October, whoever England draw in that, it would be nice to think they can't draw those teams in the Nations League. So at least you're playing fresh teams, you're not playing the same teams. But what do we do about it to get people to give a shit about it? Not a lot, mate. It's better than friendlies. That's it. I don't know. Perhaps you could long out the tournaments. It was over a longer period, maybe. I don't think you can, to be honest. Unfortunately, international football for a lot of people is just a nuisance during the club season. I would like, personally, that we just made the club season shorter and played international football for a month at the end. We had all the qualifying for, say, Euro 2024. We had it all next summer, 4 to 5 weeks at the end. We finished the season in like the first, second week of May, and then we have a month of international football where that's the only focus. And it wouldn't feel like such a nuisance. I realise that sort of schedule doesn't work for everybody, and a lot of people disagree with that. But these games, they just feel like a pain in the arse, don't they? For many of us, not for everyone, admittedly. Theodore says, "Hi, James. Who do you think is the best in the world in each position at the moment?" You're hitting me there, aren't you? Because I don't watch as nearly enough European football as I used to, and you've also caught me on the spot. Goalkeeper, Hugo Lloris. No, I jest, although massively underrated. Goalkeeper. I still think Alisson is one of the most unique. His one-on-one save percentage is outstanding. His distribution is good. I think he's got to be right up there. Right back, maybe Hakimi at PSG or Emerson Royal, depending on your preference. Left back, to be honest, I think Cancelo's worth a shout, isn't he? It's got to be in and around that conversation. Centre back would be Harry Maguire. Centre back. Oh, is the game blessed with brilliant world class centre backs at the moment? I'm trying to gauge over clubs and teams. I mean, it's probably Van Dijk, to be honest. I know he's had a poor start to the season, but I think you'd still put him at top level, wouldn't you? Sitting player, six. I mean, I think Rodri's great. Away with Kevin De Bruyne as an eight as well? It's just going to be Man City players at this stage, isn't it? 10, I'm still having Messi. Is that okay, Nico? Can I still have Messi? He's ignoring me. Centre forward is Haaland. Haaland or Mbappe, depending on. Are we classing Mbappe as an out-and-out centre forward? If so, then I think, yes, maybe arguably him, but Haaland's on a different level, isn't it? There you go. Said quite a few City players there, but I'll put my hands up straight away and say I'm no expert on European football. And somebody, now I know people raving about Tchouameni's performance for Real Madrid and Atletico, for example. I've never seen him play. I can't really comment on him, so I'm not going to blag it. Thomas Jennings says, "Hi, James. Why do you think West Ham has struggled so far, and what should Moyes do to fix it?" There might be a bit of mental fatigue goes on top of what Dan suggested about Liverpool, where, you know, the disappointment of hitting the Europa semi-final, coming a bit short, getting into the Conference League rather than the Europa League. Possession numbers aren't good, like the second for possession. I know they've had some difficult games. I think that's worth saying that West Ham have played City, Chelsea, Tottenham and a very informed Brighton. So the fixtures haven't been good. What hasn't helped is you lose at Forest, you lose at Everton. If West Ham have won those two fixtures, not really having too much of a conversation. So just not clicking at the moment. I didn't overly get the impression, other than when Benrahma hit the post, that they were going to score at Everton last weekend. It was pretty disappointing. It was drab, but I think a lot of that is credit to Everton. I think they do struggle quite often against teams who ask questions of West Ham to say, what have you got to break us down? And ironically, I still think they're probably, for the big six, maybe still the most difficult team to play against outside of the big six. They are frustrating to play against. So I wouldn't have overly concerns about them. I think certain things haven't helped, like Shamaka got ill, for example. Agüero's come in, got injured. They're to go and buy Kehrer instead. So there's certain things haven't worked. I know there's a lot of West Ham fans want Flynn Downs to come into the team at the moment. Again, I've got to put my hands up and say I haven't seen him play football yet. So I can't really comment if he'd be a better option for them than Suchek. But it seems to be what a lot of people think involved with West Ham at the moment. They'll be fine. There's zero concerns about them. And I still think there's every chance they'll finish top half. FPL PTSD says, did you have a dream car when you were a lad? I always fancied a Lamborghini Countache, ended up with a Rover. See, I mean, I didn't even know if that's the correct pronunciation. I had a friend who had a parent who had a TVR. That was a great little thing to spin around in. So it might have been that maybe, but I was never into cars. Prabesh De Hau says, there are rumours suggesting Conte's link with Juventus. How do you think Spurs will fare if Conte leaves and who will be the next manager? Right, so I don't believe there's anything going on with Conte and Juventus. I'm not concerned about it in the slightest. I don't actually know why you'd leave a Premier League club at this stage of a season to leave one that's in crisis in Serie A. I don't know what the benefit of that is. I don't think Juventus will offer him more money. I don't think they're offering more money for the transfer market. Seems like they're not in a good place at the moment, Juventus, after many years of unbelievable success, it should be said. So no concerns. I think when Conte leaves, Tottenham will be a huge challenge for whoever comes in. Someone will need to come in and, I think, change the approach to, let's say, a more aesthetically pleasing attacking style quite quickly and maintain consistent winning football. And that's going to be a real, real challenge. Whenever Conte leaves Tottenham and whatever he does in the next week, month, year, however long he stays with Tottenham, it will be a huge challenge for whoever takes over. And I imagine that we'll have a very, very difficult period. Ideally, it's the sort of change that would happen in the pre-season rather than the mid-season. I think, to be honest, I think a lot of us think that Tottenham are in with a strong chance of finishing top four this year because of Antonio Conte and the sheer incredible firepower that we have up front. Otherwise, if we didn't, you know, if Nuno Santos still manager of Tottenham, we're obviously not talking about Tottenham as a top four proposition. A lot of people think that Tottenham will do it because of Conte. He's hugely important, whether you're a lover of his style or not. I can see what he's trying to do. Many of you will know that from the Mourinho period, I'm not a massive fan of counter-attacking defensive football, but I can at least see the plan coming together with Conte of what he's trying to do and the devastation of when it works well. Because when we win the ball back and we attack teams, actually it's scintillating. It's quite exciting watching it happen. It just doesn't happen enough in games for my liking. I would like us to have more control. But when he eventually moves, yeah, it's going to be really, really tough. I think in a weird way, he might even be the toughest one to replace because there is still a lot of quality at Tottenham that I think is under a certain level. And I think, you know, to be fair, like Emerson Royal, who I've been in defence of, he's not a long-term answer, where Conte's masking it a lot at the moment. Nahal says, which forward partnership you prefer, Son and Kane or Berbatov and Kane? What a good question. I'm going to say Son and Harry. Loved Robbie, but I didn't love him as much as most Tottenham fans did, to be totally honest. Berbatov was godlike when he was on it. Honestly, phenomenal. But I think what Harry and Sonny have done in terms of goals, I think Sonny's got more than Robbie Keane for Tottenham now. I mean, it's phenomenal. So I think Sonny and Kane. But that said, they don't feel like a partnership because in the most common system, obviously Sonny plays on the left. And Harry plays up front, whereas Berbatov and Keane both played like 10s and used to alternate whether they played as a 9 or 10. One would come short, one would drop off, or they'd both drop short, which give defenders nightmares. So despite Son and Kane having this incredible goal-scoring partnership where they are obviously the best in terms of goals and assists directly for each other, Berbatov and Keane was a real forward partnership. It's an interesting one. An interesting one. Like, I mean, I'd put it to Arsenal fans to think about. Would you? Because Perez and Henry is one of the best combinations, isn't it? And I think Fabregas and someone, maybe even Fabregas and Henry, like you wouldn't call them forward partnerships, despite the goals they created for each other. So, but Son and Kane. If I had to pick a Tottenham team with the best Tottenham players I've seen in my lifetime, they both go in now, and the other two wouldn't. Ross Johnson says, hi, mate. Hope you're good. How do you think England will do in the World Cup? And don't you just love the red away kit? Not sure on the home kit, though. No, I don't love the red kit because it's red, Ross, and you should know me. That said, I think it's as good as it could be for a red kit. It does have a great nostalgic retro feel about it. Worth saying, whenever I think of that retro red kit, I remember us getting beat by the USA in 1993 and Germany in the same summer. So I'm not sure if we had any real success in that particular kit. The home kit gives vibes of losing to Iceland in 2016. But you know what? The kit's changed so much now, Ross, that I don't overly get fussed or think about it too much. I certainly wouldn't pay the money to buy either of them. Jacko says, do you have any insight into how Chelsea will set up under Potter? Who will be the key front men? Will Sterling or Aubameyang be good differentials? I think Gary Mantle, I'm sure, our Chelsea correspondent, will correct me if I'm wrong. But I know he said on our Slack channels that basically Reece James is the only Chelsea player that he would consider currently until we have further information. Sterling could very well do well, like Trossard has if he plays left wing back, but I'm not paying 10 odd million for it, or roughly that price. Aubameyang, no interest in, to be honest. Buying Aubameyang over Mitrovic, cheaper. Tony, cheaper. More consistent, but at least you know they're going to play and stuff as well. So look, we've got one game to go on. He set the team up not too dissimilarly to how he had been doing over the last few months with Brighton, but we know that he likes to change, and a bit more time working with the team, he might decide on different solutions. So to be honest, Jack, just be guessing, mate. Like, don't get Chelsea for the sake of getting Chelsea. Reece James is the best one if you want a Chelsea player. Lado Tree says, good luck, James, and all managers. Thanks. What do we need good luck for this week? Isham Bart says, what are your thoughts on Ollie Watkins as the third striker? Not keen. I think timing-wise before Southampton would have been more justifiable. Less so now. Leeds away, Nottingham Forest away. They are away fixtures. And Chelsea, then Fulham away. So the three away fixtures are fine, but they're all away. And it's Chelsea at home in the middle. So, I mean, I don't know how do you buy Watkins at the moment over Tony or Mitrovic? Rather keep Jesus on four yellows and a blank, I think, would be my take at the moment. So, wouldn't be Kane. Alistair Cooper says, hey, mate, last two spots on my wild card this week. Would you go for Trippier, Solanke, and Martinelli or Trippier? Oh, what have you done here, Alistair? This sounds like a terrible deadline stream question, mate. Would you go for Trippier? I'm going to guess this is Trippier or Solanke and Martinelli, or Trippier and Isak Solanke. At this stage now, Trippier and Solanke. Manchester United says international friendlies are pants. Lalu Tree says, what to consider between wildcard 9 and wildcard 13? With the shift in fixtures and the fact that when you get to 13, you want probably more Manchester City, Liverpool and Arsenal players that you can get without that wild card. Doesn't mean wild carding now is wrong. One of the questions I hate is, when's best the wild card? Well, it's team dependent. There isn't necessarily a right or wrong. So look, I'm in a situation where, take an example, I've got no Liverpool. I've got three Manchester City, one Arsenal. So I'm not going to get the 9 in game week 13, am I? So what's my priority? Well, for me, it's still probably Manchester City. Liverpool, whether it's priority or not, depends how I feel and what I see the next couple of weeks. And it's worth saying, game week 13, they're away to Nottingham Forest on a 12:30 kickoff, straight after they play West Ham on a Wednesday night and Manchester City the previous Sunday. And I believe they play on the Champions League, I want to say, I think, and don't quote me on this, the Tuesday after was Nottingham Forest as well. Could be the Wednesday though. But in any case, just the 12:30 Saturday, we've heard Klopp's comments on it enough that that doesn't make that Nottingham Forest away fixture quite as attractive as it looks until we get there and have got more information. So, look, you need to be conscious. If you're wildcarding now, what do you want your team to look like by week 13? But that, I think many of your opinions and feelings will change between now and then. Do you have to have Liverpool? Do you have to have Arsenal? I wouldn't want to be any less than two Man City at home to Brighton for Manchester City's last four. I'd want three. Leicester away, Fulham at home, Brentford at home. So that's the priority. Make sure I'm close to Manchester City. TL says, good evening, James. A happy and lucky Game Week 8 Sun owner here. Congratulations. Looking to buy a ticket for Tottenham versus Liverpool. Really excited to visit the new stadium for the first time. Any preference in seats area you'd recommend? It depends how you like to watch a game, to be honest. From the atmosphere perspective, go on the Big South Stand. If you don't mind having a low angle, get that as close to the front as possible. If you want a high vantage point further up the back of that stand, I think upper east where I sit, which is an amazing view and still quite close to the atmosphere, but it's going to cost you more than south stand. I think really for people going for a one-off, the recommendation would probably be to go on the south stand. Manchester United says, Lalu wildcard now. What's the point in wildcard in 13 when you have to use it by 16 anyhow? Some good fixture swings, Palace, Leicester, Chelsea, etc. That's one way of looking at it. Or the second way of looking at it is that you can go into game week 12 with no Manchester City, no Arsenal, and you can wildcard in six Manchester City and Arsenal players straight afterwards. So the idea that there's no point in it is wrong. Ash88 Gloss says, hi, James. My mate is at work. He's a Hammers fan, and he's sick of David Moyes. Main gripes being that he's too predictable and keeps playing lads that are out of form. Agree. Who would be better for them? There's no guarantee that if West Ham got a new manager in, that it would be better. I'd potentially keep an eye on the situation with Mark Warburton as the new assistant manager. And ask your mate how he would feel if David Moyes was sacked and Mark Warburton was appointed. Theodore says, one more from me. What would you do with Fofana in Sky? Well, I think you hold for the moment if you've got. I certainly wouldn't buy at this stage. Entry point for buying would probably be when they play Aston Villa on the Sunday in game week 11. But at the moment, I think you sit there, you hold, you hope he gets back in the team. You use the information from the Palace fixture, then the Champions League fixture. And if it doesn't look good, fine, move. FF Thinker, Sean Fort says, thoughts on moving out Raya after the single Sky game day, potentially to Neto, to cover captaincy as 7-4-5 or leave on Raya. Over that period that you'd be moving with Bournemouth, I mean, what's the captaincy? West Ham away? What are you expecting? No, I'd just stick that out with Raya and I'd look for a different solution, I think, there, to be totally honest. But yes, that's the right time to come off is obviously after the Brighton game, but I mean, Neto wouldn't be in my thoughts. You'd be coming to Neto basically at the end of Neto's good fixtures. Gary Smith is in, says, James, reminds me, Gary, how much I enjoyed contributing to the Game Week 38 Champ Man FPL stream last night. Thoroughly enjoyed that. It was a brilliant 2.5 hours with the guys from Man on FPL. Posh Rodder says, my missus thinks I listen to you more than her. Say hello to Jill, please. Hi, Jill. She is a big fan. Have you ever been to Peterborough or seen them play? Yes, I've seen Tottenham play at Peterborough in a pre-season friendly that we won 4-0 in... Yeah, James. 2008, I believe. Pavlyuchenko scored a fairly stupid volley, if I remember correctly. Ross Johnson says, James, would you rather have Jovinho's hairline, Ozil's eyes, or Carlos Tevez's smile? Ah, this is the sort of question that I come for, mate. I would have Jovinho's hairline. Yeah, Jovinho's hairline, and it would just all go. Let's go with that. Chandra Chur says, what do you think of Billing and Justin for the next four game weeks? Three fixtures at home. I want Trent and Salah in wildcard 9. Need to sacrifice Martinelli. I think if you're on wildcard, mate, you should get the players that you like. Do you like Billing and Justin? I think Billing, in all honesty, I wouldn't pay the extra over Tavernier personally. Yes, he's scored in the last two. But I think Tavernier, the saving to Tavernier might be quite cute. Billing's not going to be a regular goal scorer. He is playing as the 10 at the moment, but I would save the 0.4 or so. It might be 0.5 by the time the week comes around on Tavernier, I think, who's on a lot of the set pieces and will be easier to bench. Who's the other player you said? Justin. Leicester, mate. As discussed on the game review pod that we released on Tuesday, I still think Justin and Castagne are decent, but not because of nothing defensively. They both assisted the two goals at Tottenham, right? So, I mean, what have they ended up with that for that? You get, what, -1 for conceding 6, then the assist, what they ended up on 2. So is that right? We had Justin, Castagne and Perisic all assisting that game and who ended up on 2 points. That'd be quite something. That's one for the record books for people to chase up after. I don't hate it. I think, look, you're on wild card. It's the right time to go in Forest at home. So they're both reasonable picks. Neither in consideration for me at the moment. James Cook says, hi, James. Thanks for your great content. Do you think Southgate should stick with five at the back at the World Cup or switch it to four at the back to fit in certain players further forward? I think it's, to be honest, it should be opposition dependent. And I still think, unfortunately, I know many, I say unfortunately because many believe it to be unfortunately, that England's best chance of beating the better nations is to play a back five. I strongly think that. As much as, yes, we lose an attacking player from the front line. When we play Iran in week one, should we play a back five, in my opinion? No. But you might have to use that as preparation for what's to come in the tournament. And I also accept that. It's not how you start in the tournament. It's how you finish. So I think for the majority of games, yes, back five is the right answer. But England have to make sure that becomes a back three at the right times, like was done really well when we played Germany in the Euros, where Trippier and Shaw were really aggressive off the ball and didn't just sit back as a flat five. They did it in that game better than any of the others, where they were really aggressive and pressed high. David Tyner says, hey, James, what is the next best wild card opportunity? Well, I think if you've not used it and you're not going now, I think it's wait till 13. I mean, it's dead end into 12 and 13. Dan, the FPL fan, says, hi, James. What is the best signing that Spurs have made from the lower leagues? Gary Mabbott from Bristol Rovers, just getting us into another stream. Mabzy was obviously a legend and certainly comes into the reckoning of brilliant lower league signings that Tottenham have made. I'm trying to think more my own era because obviously Mabzy joined in the early 80s, which was before I was born. Great lower league signings. Why have I got Gary Doherty in my head? Great. I mean, we nicked a few from West Ham when they got relegated. I think Gary Mabbott's a great shout, in fairness, mate. I'm trying to think of someone who, longevity-wise, in the modern era, I can't think of any that would have been better than Mabbott, to be fair. It's a great shout, Dan. Theodore says, just came around to say that Lisandro Martinez is the best centre-back in the world. Thank you very much for your amazing insight, Theodore. Richard J says, afternoon, James. Thoughts on Perisic options? Seems too early to go back to Trent. Well, let's wait and see what the fitness is. And if you can afford to go back and want to go back, I don't mind it if you do. Abby says, Sky question, what do you think of having a Bournemouth player for the West Ham Bournemouth single game day? Madison to Bournemouth player, West Ham and Tottenham, then to Jesus for Nottingham Forest could be a possibility. Who do you think will be a good option? I still think the explosiveness in that. Look, think about this logically. You're getting a Bournemouth player because you want to cover captaincy against West Ham, right? What's your realistic expectations of that? Realistically. Get a Bournemouth player in, because like Solanke, because he's 7.3 in Sky and it's an enabler that allows you other things, fine. Or if you want to go for Neto like the previous guy did and it enables, fine. But doing it as part of chain moves because they've got the captaincy and you get Bournemouth's two worst fixtures of the next eight, West Ham away and Tottenham at home. Nah, I think if you really don't know what you want, you wait. You get the right West Ham player at the time, I think is the answer there. Dan says, really enjoyed last night's Chapman fantasy stream. Wish had been around in season one when you hosted. I had some fun. Put it that way, I had some fun. Danelius has come in to say she'll listen later. You can do. Yes, this will be out as an audio podcast later for you. Brad Craig says, every year Zaha has a hot streak. Yeah, when I don't own him. Followed by him disappearing for half the season. Is there something different about either him or Palace this year that makes that recurrence less likely? I believe so, yes. I think there's a couple of things. He's more direct, which might sound a bit contradictory because he's very direct anyway. But what I mean by that is, I mean, shooting earlier. Look at the goals against Liverpool, the brilliant goal we scored at home to Brentford. He's shooting earlier. And that wrapped finish is not something we normally see from him. Normally he gets into position and you just get power from Wilfried Zaha, I think, a lot of the time. And the composure element, despite being amazing technically as a dribbler, that composure element I think is missing. So I think that's added to his game. And I think more importantly, the reintroduction of Eze. as another super ball carrying option. And it may even be that in some of these, I was going to say routines, a little bit unfair, let's say easier fixtures on paper, we might see more of Michael Olise as a different threat on the right hand side as well. And that just means you can't just cater for Zaha, because a lot of the time in years gone by, teams just cater for Zaha and take their chances elsewhere. Well, I think that the brilliant technical skills of Eze and the likes of Olise, if he plays more, can really help with that. So that's what I think is different. It's just a little bit more options for Wilf to play with as well. And I think technically, I think he's improved a little bit as well. Ross Johnson says, last one from me today, James. I triple captained Son last week. Was I unlucky he didn't start, or lucky that he came on for 15 and did what he did? Look, don't worry about it, mate. Take the points and enjoy it. Would I recommend triple captaining the player who you're not even 100% sure is going to start in a single game week? No, I wouldn't recommend it. But don't worry about the consequences. You've got more points than most will get on that this year, so congratulations. Abby says, Sky, best defender for Brentford v Brighton single game day. On what I've looked at with Brighton, it will probably still be Lewis Dunk, I think. And there is a case for that to go in for the Brentford game, get Dunk, captain him, possibly even captain Dunk against Nottingham Forest on the Tuesday afterwards, Tuesday the 18th of October, and then move him on again. FPL Sino says, afternoon, James. Great stuff as per usual. What are your thoughts on playing Zaha game week 9? And would you transfer out a Fulham keeper before game week 9 or change Saka to Salah with money I have in the bank? Have you end up with a Fulham keeper? That's a good one. I wouldn't be in a rush to move that if I had it, though. Fixture's decent for Fulham, so wouldn't be a priority. I'm loath to advise anyone to sell an Arsenal player before the North London Derby, so please accept my personal bias on this. Playing Zaha in 9 against Chelsea is absolutely fine. What Chelsea got? No clean sheets since game week 1? Absolutely fine. TL says, thank you for the South Stand recommendation. Hopefully there are enough tickets left for the big game. An FPL question now. Sell Son for Madison or keep Son? Selling Gross and Dunk for Madison and Justin. Well, I think the answer there lies in your structure. So obviously, if you are selling Son for Madison, presumably you're leaving yourself without a premium midfielder, and I don't like that. On the face of Son to Madison, I don't mind that as a move. But I think where do you want your structure to be in a couple of weeks? Do you still have your wild card left? And once you consider those two factors, you probably find the answer that's best for you rather than a best generic answer as such. Dan, the FPL fan, says, Haaland has said he'd have pineapple on a pizza. Do you agree? It's fine. Wouldn't be my choice, but, you know, each to their own. Abby says, do you think England will top their group in World Cup? I have booked that round 16 game. Well, that's silly, isn't it? It might not be silly. You might have bought the match tickets and it will be what it will be. I get that. I think we'd be favourites to do so. I think the important game will probably be the second game against USA from that perspective. I'm well aware that Wales will give us a difficult game. I think even Iran will give us a difficult game. England notoriously do not perform well in opening games of tournaments. The trick will be to beat Iran, beat USA, and then we can do what we want with Wales with probably the group one. Yes, I'm going to say yes, but I don't think any of England's three games will be straightforward or overly easy. I think England will make hard work of it, but would rightly be favourites. Stephen Smalley says, hi, James. Corned beef hash or caviar on toast? Corned beef, mate, all day long. Richard J says, thanks. No problem, Richard. Nihal says, with the fixtures ahead, is Zaha and Eze a good combination to own? I'm not keen on Eze as a fantasy asset at this stage. I'd be more keen on watching what I said. Could Olise get more minutes over this time? Because I think Olise has the productivity that could mean there's holes, possibly. I don't get that sense with Eze as such. And I think I've spoken about this before. I think eventually he could be a good midfield player. He's another one. I wouldn't have even minded if Southgate put him in the squad. So I want to see you train, to be honest. I think he's a super talent. Eze's not on my radar currently. Posh Rodders says, would you rather watch football with JR, that's Jim Ross, and Jerry Lawler commentating, or old school wrestling with Carragher and Neville commentating? I think I will take JR and Jerry Lawler on football. Nahal says, love last night's Champman stream. It's Riverside. Truckers. Abby says, I have asked two questions on Sky transfers. Thanks for the replies. How do you remember these off the top of your head? I do have a spreadsheet sitting in front of me, which I'm looking at. Although I don't, I only have the fixtures there. I don't have the Sky tab open at the moment. But whenever I record a stream, I have the my patrons will know I have my opening Premier League fixtures tab in front of me. So I'm looking at all the fixtures up to the World Cup in front of me on a very small box. And I talk about it enough, like the Brighton fixtures, to know what days they are and stuff like that. Colin Bugler says, hit the like, people. Have a great weekend, James. Yeah, thanks very much. Be good to smash a like if you're in, guys. Hit the sub button. Theodore says, World Cup predictions, James. Winner, biggest nation to go out early. Top scorer, dark horse. Winner? I think if they perform to their best, I think it will be France. I think they've got the most variation in terms of match winners, the deepest squad of quality. So I think France would rightly be favourites. I think we'll there's every chance we'll see the best Brazil team that we've seen in quite a while. There's a possibility. Biggest nation to go out early. I'd need to have a look back at the draw. Someone will. Might be England. I'm gonna say Wales because they're absolutely massive. Top scorer is obviously Harry Kane. No, I think Mbappe. Dark horse. It depends on the draw a lot. Because what you want for a dark horse, like, if you will, almost like England were in 2018 or Turkey in 2002, for example, or even, I guess, Croatia in 2018. You need it where someone goes out that opens the draw up. Otherwise, essentially, you end up with the best teams will normally do the business once you get to the quarterfinals. I can't remember most of the draw, so forgive me. I'm going to have a quick look at it. Draw, James, draw. Teams in trouble. I'll tell you one that might be in trouble, and this is going to create a reaction. Portugal in Group H, although I think they could do very well as well, but I think they've got a very competitive group with Ghana, Uruguay, and sunny South Korea. Spain or Germany, obviously in the same group, in Group E, and if there's a winner from that, obviously puts the other one at risk. That's probably quite dependent on what Japan we get. Difficult to foresee. Difficult to foresee one of the big nations going out in the group. If you asked me to tip, I'd say all the fancy teams would go through. Maybe Group H could be quite interesting. Who's next? Nahal says, who will be your dark horse if you were a betting man? Mine is Canada for this World Cup. Oh, dark horse. I didn't really answer, did I? I'm trying to think where you've got a. I'm going to say USA as a dark horse. Potential quarterfinalists. TL says, wild card hasn't been played yet. Probably will use it ahead of game week 13. Santa Madison would leave enough money to do Gross to Zaha next game week. Well, Gross and Dunk to Madison and Justin wouldn't. Cheers anyway. Now, that's okay. So the fact, TL, that you haven't used the wild card means it's more viable to make the move off Sun, because if you obviously hate that and you need to get back to Sun, De Bruyne, Salah, that the wild card obviously makes that much easier for you. Dan, the FPL fan, says, do you have a patron? Thanks for the content, mate. Have a great weekend. Yes, I do. You can support our content at www.patreon.com/planetFPL, where there's additional 5 podcasts every week from intermediate tier and above, and additional content at advanced tier, where you can just get hold of my planner from basic tier and join the Slack community. I would tell you what we're doing for next week's content, but to be honest with you, I don't know yet. I'm not sure. I can tell you next week's Clash of Correspondents is Arsenal versus Tottenham. with Adam Pritchard and Ricky Saunders. Nahal says, also had a bad game week, fell from 220k to 660k last game week. How do you deal with these highs and lows? Good question. And we'll end with that because I think it's a really good question. I deal with it quite well. So I'll give you a perfect example. Last year, I had a very similar drop after Mo Salah's big haul at Old Trafford. It was the Captain Havertz week against Norwich. And all you can do about laugh at it is laugh at it and do your best to make it better. I deal with it probably better than most because what impacts my mood is what Tottenham do, not what my FPL team does. I realise that's not as easy for everybody else. But I think all you can do is look at the decision-making process, ask yourself if you went back in time and say, would you make the same decisions again? If the answer is yes, then you've done as well as you can. And all you do is you do as well as you can the next week. That's it, really, essentially. Thanks very much, guys. Really enjoyed that stream. Oh, look, there's a few more I'm gonna go to. Goblin140 says, thoughts on Suj bringing Isak in early? Covered it on Tuesday's pod. Not his best ever decision, but he had his reasoning. And there's no guarantee that he's injured for Newcastle's game as yet, so it may not matter. FPL Richie says, afternoon, James. What do you think of the prospect of Saka at left wing-back for England? I don't hate that, by the way. If we really, you know, if Chilwell can't go, for example. Definitely, I'd probably prefer that to... And Trippier's done well there, but I'd probably prefer that. I'd like to have a left footer in a wing-back system there. Two, for those on Wildcard 9, which team's assets has been overlooked in your view? Maybe Leeds. Cheers, mate. Yeah, I think the problem with Leeds is I think one everyone would like is Sinisterra, and it just feels a little bit pricey in comparison to other assets. And you look at the next few, includes Palace away, Arsenal at home. It's not great. Then you've got Leicester, Fulham's great. The first game, Villa's great. Then you're into Liverpool. You've got Tottenham away, couple after that. It's a little bit middling. I think if Sinisterra was cheaper, he'd be very, very popular. It just feels a little bit difficult to justify that price for him. But he's probably the one worth paying for, to be honest. You're very welcome, Dan. No problem. And the house says, cheers, James. Appreciate this. No problem at all. Wish you all to have a very, very good weekend. If you're on the stream, smash a like, hit the sub button before you leave. Myself and Suj will be back on Monday. Have a great weekend, everyone. And for the benefit of those on the audio, cue music, please, Manchar.
Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.